and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today's special guest is a very special lady. She's an Olympic gold medalist, plus countless other medals and trophies and achievements along the way. She is the former captain of the Australian women's hockey team. It's Nikki Hudson. How you doing, Nikki?
Oh, I am so excited to be in the studio with you at the moment, Goff.
Well, I mean, let's not get carried away. Let's, you know, this could end badly. But look, one thing that I do need to ask you up front, I've got a lot of Canadian friends and we have Canadian listeners, and they get very upset because according to Canadians, there's only one type of hockey, and that is ice hockey.
Oh.
Because all other hockey is a poor substitute. Would you like to have a rebuttal to those Canadian listeners?
Oh, I tell you what, I've seen the way those guys play. Oh, it's just, yeah, do you know what? They got nothing on us females. They wear all that armour, all that protective gear, helmet, everything. We're just chicks with sticks wearing Lycra, shin pads, and we're out there smashing each other. So I think we've fairly well got on top of those boys.
Have you ever, just out of curiosity, have you ever strapped on the skates and tried playing ice hockey?
Yeah, well, I've done a bit of rollerblading, which didn't end too well. I'm not one for the cold, to be honest.
Ah, okay.
I'd rather be out. I haven't ever ice skated, but I must admit, I do love watching the ice hockey. It's pretty cool. Only when they smash each other. It's good fun.
The other thing they always tell me, and I want to see if it's the same with field hockey, is they always tell me that the goalies are nuts. To play that position, you've got to be a bit cuckoo bananas. Is it the same? Have you ever met a sane goalie?
I'm going to get myself in trouble here with what I answer. I will say goalkeepers deserve the utmost respect, and I know because I'm a striker, so I hit the ball at them. And believe me, sometimes when you hit them, it's not till later on and they come up and they show you and they've got this massive cork on their leg and they're like, that was you. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Yeah, they are the bravest people I know. So shout out to all the goalkeepers.
So they are a bit nuts to want to play that position.
Yeah, they're fairly friggin' nuts, yeah.
Now, going back, let's talk about Nikki Hudson. What was it when you were a kid, what was it about hockey that drew you in to play as a sport?
Yeah, it's funny because it was a family sport. So mum, dad had played for many years. I was always athletic as a kid. I have three brothers, one sister. They're all exactly the same, all athletic. And I was actually playing both soccer and hockey. And I had to make a choice at the age of about 14 and chose hockey. And I guess from the age of 13, I used to play every weekend five games. So I'd play under 13s, under 15, under 18, A3, A1.
Christ.
And that was every weekend. But, you know, it's funny. I never had a passion for a career when I was at school. Like everyone wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever. I just wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist. And I said that to mum at the age of 9. Do you know what, mum? I'm going to be an Olympic gold medalist one day.
And
I'm going to be the best.
Well, do you ever regret not following soccer? Has there ever been a time in your life where you're like, oh, I wish I had tried the soccer avenue, not hockey?
No, because I've been playing. It's funny. This is a funny story. I did get caught when Rick Charlesworth was coaching, and it was, I can't remember the year, about 1994. I'd moved to Kalgoorlie with a partner at the time, was travelling back and forth to Perth for training, and when I was back on a weekend in Kalgoorlie, I decided, hey, I might have a kick around with the soccer team. So I didn't tell them about it, and just so happens that this one weekend we had to fly to Europe. Rick was sitting beside me. I got the local newspaper. As I opened it, I'm on the back page because I'd scored 5 goals, and he just looked over my shoulder and said, I think we need to have a chat here. But since then, I have actually played about 3 years down at UKI for the UKI Pythons, and I intend to play this year as well. I love it. Soccer and hockey, they're the same, but they're different.
In athletically the same? Like the running and that kind of aspect,
yeah,
of it?
Yeah, I think probably soccer is a lot more physical, but the skill level is just awesome. So I'm thinking of joining the local team and also hopefully getting back to hockey. I haven't played really since I retired. So,
okay. Now, I am curious. So let's say from like the age of 16 to the day you did retire, can you tell us what, if any, to be honest, I don't know, but can you tell us what sort of rise in professionalism you saw? Because I'm assuming at the start of your career it was quite amateurish, and then through like training standards and so forth and so on. Can you take us through sort of the rise of professionalism that you witnessed?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I was fortunate that when I came into the team, I was actually still in high school, year 12. I was away at a tournament playing for Darling Downs, just like a regional tournament. And I hadn't yet played Queensland Senior, so I was only 16. And I just finished playing a game, and there was a lady, this is the old days where you didn't have a mobile phone, and she's come racing down and said, oh, there's a gentleman on the phone called Rick Charlesworth that would like to have a chat to you. And I was like, I'm sure that's the guy that coaches at Hockey Roos. So I went up and I picked up the phone. Hi, Nikki, it's Rick. You know, I hear you've been playing well. I'd love you to think about coming on a tour. And I thought it was a prank call, so I said, yeah, good one, mate. Donk, hung up the phone. Rang back. It really was Rick. And that was in about September. And I finished high school, spent 3 or 4 days on the Gold Coast, and then moved to Perth at the age of 17, took up a full-time scholarship with the AIS, and was there for 16 years. And, you know, I was so fortunate to have had a good coach like Rick. I had 8 years under him. He really is one of the best coaches in the world, I think, in sport.
The driving of standards?
Oh, the squad we had for 8 years, leading into Atlanta, of course, where the girls won gold, leading into Sydney, where I was part of the team that won gold. You could never, I think, have seen, watched, or appreciated a more professional team than our team, because we were just driven to be the best athletes we could. And the good thing about Rick, which makes him different from other coaches, is that he won't choose a person because they're good at hockey. He chooses an athlete and then he teaches them how to play. And I know a lot of the institutes at the moment, that's what they do. They, you know, they go into the schools and they say, right, we need all these athletic kids. They look at them. They say, right, you'll be good at rowing. You'll be good at athletics. You'll be, and I think that's wonderful. It's very hard to teach a person how to be athletic, but it's easy to teach an athlete how to be good at a chosen sport.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when you say that, because I love my AFL, I love my football, right? And so you hear nowadays of a lot of, I mean, the one that springs to mind is Mason Cox, who plays for Collingwood, being a big American lad who's never seen Australian rules football before, but he did a combine and they tested him athletically. And they're like, I think you'd be good at football. Let's get you over and see how you go. And he's had a 4 or 5 year career, and hopefully it goes on for him. And it's exactly what you just said.
And it really is. And I think that's the way at the moment sport is. Like, I think with the technology, the science, everything they've got, they can find these people that are athletic. And if you've got the athleticism, you can do anything, because you've got the coordination, the fitness, the athleticism. You've got an athlete's brain. You know, I transitioned to soccer when I quit hockey and spent 3 years playing with a local club team. And, you know, it only took me 6 weeks to pick it up, and I started becoming a key player, and just loved it. So I think it's much easier to teach an athlete how to play sport than to get someone who's okay at what they do and teach them to be the best athlete.
And so, talking about training, if there are young kids out there that are listening, or well, not young kids, but like teenagers who are listening, and that they play hockey and they really enjoy it, but they want to know fitness-wise what sort of training they should do. Should they be looking at more cardio-based stuff like running, bike, swim, or should they be throwing some weights around in the gym? Like, what sort of training would you suggest that they sort of do to improve their game?
Well, I'd firstly say I'd confiscate their phones and their iPads, and I'd throw them in the bin. Get them outside. As a kid, when I was growing up, from probably the age of 9 till 13, 14, with my 4 brothers and sisters, every afternoon we came home and we had 2 old trampolines frames at the end, and we put netting around them, and it was on for young and old. And we would have played hockey, cricket, whatever, for 3 or 4 hours until Mum called us in. And I think the problem at the moment is everything's based on social media. Everything's based on, you know, doing all this stuff and showing off and doing this and doing that, rather than in my era, it was just about grafting, hard work, put your body on the line, play for your country. To me, there's no better thing than give me all the money in the world and I wouldn't trade it for the career I had in being part of a successful team that was able to just work our ass off. And believe me, we did. So you
would sort of recommend just excessive, well, not excessive, but you would recommend just lots of practice. So you don't have to necessarily go in the gym and throw weights around. It's more about just getting out there and playing as much as you can.
Yeah, and you know, I think forget the ego, get rid of egos. You know, like you, my belief is that you can never be good enough. I always knew that even though I was at the peak of my career, there was so much more I could learn. I was never satisfied with what I'd achieved. I always wanted more. So, you know, if I'd played a game and I'd scored 3 goals.
Could have scored 4.
Tell me about it. And then I'd mistrapped three traps. I'd missed 3 tackles. I forgot about the goals I scored and concentrated on the fact what I'd done wrong. Never think you're good enough. You can always learn from people. Do the basics. Instead of all this fancy crap that people do these days, just get out there, go to a park. Have a look at Johnny Wilkinson. You know, he used to sit in a park before he obviously devastated every Australian's heart when he kicked that goal. He would get out in a park in after hours outside of his training and he would sit there and kick goals for 2 or 3 hours. Now, to me, that's the ultimate athlete because they never think they're good enough. They go above, they go beyond. And I guess that would be my advice is listen, learn things and, you know, have some heart and some guts and just get in there and have a crack.
No, I like it. I like it very much. Now, one thing that I'm never going to experience in my life, and lots of people won't, is that feeling of standing on an Olympic dais, having the gold medal put around your neck, seeing your flag being raised up, hearing the anthem. That's something you've been lucky enough, obviously, to experience. And so can you tell us what that feeling was like?
Yeah, it was, you know, really amazing. And I guess if I can just reflect back slightly on our semi-final night where we had to obviously win the game. That night was the night that Cathy Freeman was racing in the final of the 400 and it was just before our match and the stadium was beside ours and we knew she was about to start and the roar of the crowd.
Were you allowed to watch it? Like on the TV? Did Rick let you watch it?
No, we were about to play. We were literally 5 minutes away from being on the field. And
I thought he might have used it as a motivation, but I get it. If she hadn't lost, then it wouldn't have been.
Didn't have to. The noise that came from that 100,000 Aussies out there cheering on, we all looked at each other and she's done it. Yeah. She's won gold. And I'm always in awe of other athletes who have achieved greatness. I think it's just wonderful because I know the sacrifices and the love of the sport and everything. And
did it pump you up? Like did the whole team get a big lift out of that?
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, we went on to play Argentina in the grand final. Hockey normally has the average spectators of maybe, you'd be lucky to get 30 or 40 people there, but they're probably more interested in the sausage sizzle happening on the sideline. We had 20,000 people there the night we played Argentina for the gold medal. And the thing was, with us, we knew we'd done so much, no one could beat us. So we went out there knowing we were going to win the gold medal. And after the siren went 3-1, we won, we all hugged, whatever. And I remember looking up and I could see our then Prime Minister, John Howard, and he was up there. John Williamson was up there with him. And Johnny Howard, bless his soul, he was waving a big, like, blow-up kangaroo. And to drape the flag around yourself and do a lap with your Prime Minister and 20,000 people and whoever else watching TV.
Had you ever experienced a noise like that before? Because you wouldn't have never played in front of 20,000 maybe, like screaming Australian fans. Is that a noise that lives with you?
Extraordinary. And to walk around with all of those fans and to just know that they're there to watch you do what you did and it's surreal. And I guess I do look back on it and I just think, oh my gosh, maybe one day in the near future I'll think, wow, that really happened. It was amazing. And, you know, the public got behind us so well. I could never ever do anything like that again
in
my life.
Can your brain take you back to that noise? Like if you wanted to, like if you're in the shower, just, you know, just doing your own thing, could you take yourself back and hear that noise? Like, is your memory that good?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Parts of it are a blur because it just, like everything you've worked for 8 years. And, I mean, we were talking about not just the 4 years leading in, but the other 4 years going to Atlanta where the girls won gold, and then being able to back it up in Sydney. And we had the whole pressure of a nation on us because – you know, they said, you're the favourites, you have to win. And to be able to cope with that pressure and perform, I think, is a real indication of the group around and the coaching staff and all of the coaching supporters as well. And it was amazing. I remember Waltzing Matilda was being played over the speaker. We've got flags draped around us. The crowd are just going rank. You know, the girls are like taking shoes off and throwing them up to the crowd. And it just, to know that, you know, those Australians were there to support you is just incredible. And yeah, it's a surreal moment that will always be the highlight of my life, I guess.
Now, to go back to another point that you made earlier, so again, I'm a mad AFL fan. I love my Brisbane Lions, and I've seen a lot of documentaries on their three-peat that they did in 01, 2, and 3, and they said something that you just said earlier, which was they knew they could not be beaten. It didn't matter who the opposition was, what they threw at them. They just knew that they just had that, it was just instilled in them, and they'd trained for it, and they had that belief. Can you explain to us maybe what goes into getting that sort of belief to know that you've just got this covered? If you do what you are meant to do, nothing can stop you.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I guess, I will always credit Rick Charlesworth with being the catalyst of being able to achieve what I did. He was an amazing coach. He was very tough. I had a lot of falling outs with him, believe me. But only because he knew what I was capable of, and I wasn't at the level that he wanted me at. And I did get there eventually. The thing with Rick was we covered every possible base. So we were professional. We were basically 9 to 5, 6 days a week, and not only just on the field. So there was the gym work. So we were lean. We were fit. We were tough. There was no egos. We were a very united group. And we then also would sit in the room having meetings where we would discuss, okay, so if we're in Sydney and a bus breaks down and we're on the bus and we've got to get to a game, what do we do? We covered every possible thing that could go wrong. And I think the difference is when you walk out onto a field and you know you've done everything you possibly can to be the best you can and so of those around you, then no one can beat you, you know. And I've also been in teams after that where people did the bare minimum, and for them it was just enough to not actually go on and win a gold medal. They just wanted to get picked and be called an Olympian or a Commonwealth Games. Mm-hmm. That was enough. Oh, I'm in the team. Cool. Now I can relax. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not good enough.
No, I'm so one thing that just bugs me personally, and I don't know if it bugs other people, with the Australian coverage of so the last Olympics, let's say, I'm watching it on the TV and a swimmer races and they come seventh, right? The guy doing the interview, so the journalist that's on the pool deck doing the interview, says to him, oh, well, tried your best. Never mind. And I'm like, well, no, that's not you tried your best, well, never mind. It's like, well, why didn't they win The gold, because I mean, just me personally, I know people who work with me know that I'm, I mean, Scott is, could, who owns this studio, who could probably back this up. I'm a hard taskmaster. I demand high standards from myself and the people that I work with for Beer Nuts Productions. I will make sure that any project that goes up to the Beer Nuts Productions website is the best that it possibly can be. I won't put anything up there that is of a substandard. I'm very, very strict with what I do. And so I expect the same from people I work with. And when I hear a journalist say, oh, well, never mind, I'm like, well, no, not never mind. Is that sort of the attitude that you had as well? And that sort of infuriated you with those teammates?
Yeah, it really is. And
close enough is good enough is not the right attitude.
It's funny because so often people say, oh, God, get over it. It's just a sport. But they forget that that's our life. It's our career. We've spent our whole time. And, I mean, the training I've done, I look back now and I think, how the bloody hell did I ever do it? Like, what you put your body through mentally, what you had to overcome, living away from family and friends, all of that. And when you do go to an event, and you don't perform well and the media go, oh, God, what a loser. It's heartbreaking. It really is, because you know what you've put in. Like, they go to work 5 days a week. You're doing the same thing. And, you know, it's really difficult. And as I said, I went from being under Rick Charlesworth for 8 years of winning everything because of the professionalism to then having another group for the next 4 years in another group. And I think at times the majority of people just thought it was enough to, whew, I've just made the team. Okay, that's cool. I'm now an Olympian.
But now you
well,
got
I'm sorry, but
standard.
That's not your job. Yeah. Your job is to get out there and you bust your ass and do everything you can to not only represent your country with pride. You know, if you don't win, and you've given it your everything, that's fine. But, you know, I guess I get so disappointed when I see these athletes, like these tennis players who tank, and I'm not going to mention names, but they've been given an opportunity that there are so many bloody people out there that would love that opportunity, and they go out and they take it for granted. Well, I'm sorry, but I would rather go onto that hockey pitch wearing an Australian jersey, Australian bodysuit, and be paid nothing and play for my country than to be negotiating deals to switch around and play for someone else where I'm going to earn lots of money. It's about the passion, it's what's in your soul, and I believe at the moment in various sports that's lacking.
I like you, Nikki. That's super cool. Now, I want to go a bit forward to a lot of athletes. You hear when they retire, you know, they have this very empty feeling because they've done something for 30 years and it's been their life. They've eaten it, they've breathed it, they've lived it for the last 30 years of their life. And you do hear about a lot of athletes having depression and all kinds of problems with booze and whatnot. Is that something you experienced when you retired?
To be honest, I'm not the kind of person to hide things. I retired in end of 2009, and I guess for me, hockey was my whole life from the age of six until I had 16 years with the Hockey Roos. I had no other plans to be anything but the greatest hockey player I could be. And unfortunately, because of a couple of injuries after Beijing, I had to retire at the age of 32. And I did not handle the transition from, being a golden athlete to suddenly, wow, here's the real world. Guess what? You need a job. I'm 32. Holy shit. What am I going to do for work? I was putting job applications out and they're like, okay, so what's your previous experience? Where have you worked before? Oh, actually, I haven't. This is my first job. You're 32. Yeah, I know. I'm applying for a job. You know, it's difficult. And I guess I've had a really rough couple of years. Mental health has really affected me. Because it's hard to explain, but you go from being their structure, routine, having someone telling you what to do, all of that to suddenly it's just you. What do I do? How do I cope with it? And I've last probably 2 years of my life, I've been fighting a fairly tough battle with myself and my mental health, and trying to work out what it is I need to do. I'm a lucky person because I have the most beautiful family and friends who have all supported me. And it's been tough. And as I said, I'm not one to skirt around the issue. I have really struggled, and I also understand the likes of people like, you know, Grant Hackett, Ian Thorpe, other people who have gone through the same kind of issues. And it's funny, people are very quick to judge, but they don't realise it's almost like they reach a certain age and then suddenly they're told, okay, you're done now, off you go, find something else. And it's tough, and I'm slowly but surely getting out of it. You know, I've sought help for different things that I needed to. My mental health had been terrible, but I'm on the mend, on the way up, and I'm actually hoping to get back on the hockey pitch this year. I'm looking at doing some coaching with some of the juniors, which I haven't done since I've retired, and I just want to find myself again. That's the thing. Outside of hockey, find what I'm good at, and just get out there and do it.
Super cool. Super cool. No, well, the very best of luck with that. I wish you nothing but success. Now, I do have one final question. Well, I've got two final questions for you because...
Should I be worried?
No. Not at all. So, obviously, hockey's not a game that you see kids playing very regularly. Is there one or two really simple things that Hockey Australia could do to get more boys and girls thinking about playing hockey instead of other sports? Like, is there something that jumps out at you that's really straightforward that they could easily implement?
It's funny you say that because, yeah, there is. At the moment, I'm not involved in Hockey Australia with the board or whatever else. I know a couple of friends are, and I know the people that are. I think at the moment the problem is that the up-and-coming hockey roos, junior hockey roos, all of that, they're being told that they can't go and play for their club teams. So if they're from Toowoomba, they can't go back and play club. If they're on the Gold Coast, they can't play. They all have to play in Brisbane or somewhere like that. Now, I'm sorry, but that is not a way to introduce juniors into the game. You know, when I was playing, we always came back and played for our club, and I got the greatest thrill of my life just being part of a bunch of girls that I could try and help. So I would say, I guess to every state, put your players back out there in the club comp. Put them back where they, you know, played when they were younger. Let them help develop juniors, because otherwise there will be no junior development. It will end. And you know, I think that's really, really important.
Well, it makes sense to me.
It sure doesn't. I mean, I know people are worried about injuries and whatever.
They say the same thing with cricket. I hear the same thing with cricket, that they should be allowed to play club cricket.
Exactly.
The more cricket, the better, and develop your skills and all that sort of stuff, so you don't sort of hide them away.
That's the thing. It's almost like you've got so much potential. I mean, all my nieces and nephews play hockey. I go watch them every weekend. And the sad part is, those that are in the higher levels with, say, the Kookaburras and Hockey Roos, they're not able to play. They're not allowed to. Now, these kids, if they had those players playing beside them, they would get the biggest buzz.
Yes.
They could teach them things.
Well, they'll see their skills close up.
And until they decide to do that again, I fear for the direction of the sport.
Now, my final question for you, Nikki, do you ever, when you're in your normal life day to day, you know, you got to get yourself ready and whatnot, do you ever find yourself going back to captain mode and with the people around you, your family, and say, right, you need to do this, and if we all play our role, we can all get in the car on time and we'll get there, and you need to, does that ever come out at any time?
Well, I've got two Jack Russells. My mother banned me from having children. She said, you are too irresponsible. I have two beautiful little Jack Russells, and yes, I do fight because they're old, and whenever I try and get them to come from the park to the car, they just refuse. So I yell and scream and whatever, and that to me is the most difficult thing I face at the moment. But, I'm excited. Within myself, I feel better. I'm going to go back and play hockey this year, and I'm hoping to take up a role coaching some juniors, which I haven't done yet. So I'm really hoping 2021 is going to be a hell of a lot better than last year. It can't get any worse, can it?
Absolutely. Now, if people want to learn more about Nikki Hudson or what you're doing or where you are or what's happening, where could they do that?
Well, I am based back on the Gold Coast. I was fortunate enough to have had a hockey pitch named after me at Runaway Bay Sports Supercentre, and that's a Nikki Hudson pitch. With the coaching role I'm looking to do, hopefully I can get the juniors involved on that pitch. And I guess it's taken me a long time because of the issues I've faced overcoming retiring, but I really want to get back out on that pitch and I want to help. I know I've got nieces and nephews that I can help. I can see so much talent here on the Gold Coast and in Queensland, and it's such a great game. It really is. It's phenomenal to watch at its best. Just to get kids back into sport, get off your iPads, off your phones, get into sport. I'm looking at doing a lot of promotion with Runaway Bay Sports Centre, getting out there, doing some coaching clinics. I don't even know if I've had a hit on the pitch myself or not. It's blue. I've never played on a blue pitch. It was always green when I played. I'm really looking forward to taking part in helping develop hockey this year. Very excited.
Fantastic. Well, Nikki, I wish you nothing but success. And thank you so much for coming in and joining me today on the podcast here. And all the best for the future with you.
Go, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much for the chat.
Absolutely.
You're awesome. I think you're awesome.
Well, we'll we'll get that audio and we'll just put that on loop. So
mutual admiration society here, isn't it?
Well, that's about all the time we have for today's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, obviously, and of course, like and subscribe to the podcast in whatever podcast app you might be listening to this in. And of course, leave a friendly comment. That would always be helpful and appreciated. And of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will chat to you then.